Okay, good morning, Chem 30A. It is 8 a.m., November 3rd, Chem 30A. And we're going to do Boyle's Law this morning. So Boyle's Law from the gas laws, we did an initiation or we did an overview of all the gas laws, an introduction, that's what I wanted to say, into gas laws already this this last class that we did on Thursday. And today what we're going to do is use some of those gas laws to go through and derive Boyle's Law, and then look at the Boyle's Law relationship that we have within this Boyle's Law experiment, all right? And so this is gonna be in module 7. So let's go ahead. Oh, and I gotta start the screen share. So I'm gonna start a screen share. We'll get into it, we'll jump into it right now. So let me get screen share, iPad. Okay, we should be good to go there. I can see it shows that it's sharing on my screen and everything's working right. So we're doing Boyle's Law. And as I said, this is going to be in module 7. And I need to go in and publish that just yet. So it's not live just yet, but it will be right after we finish class. I'll go in and publish it, make sure everything is there that you need to do. Okay, within Boyle's Law, we're gonna go through and show you where Boyle's Law comes from, derive Boyle's Law real quick. And then this experiment is actually meant to derive Boyle's Law. So we could do it from two different perspectives. We could derive it from the combined gas law, or we could get it from the experiment. Maybe we should get it from the experiment, show that, and then I'll show you how to derive it from the combined gas law. So we can go back and we can use material that we used last time and show how we can derive it. Okay, with Boyle's Law is about a pressure volume relationship. And what we do in this experiment is we take and use an apparatus that, there's no sense in me drawing it, I've got it right here. That is a pressure sensor. So this is a pressure sensor that is tied to a computer, essentially, that takes the data for us. And what we hook to that is a syringe. And the syringe has gradations for us to be able to measure volumes. And as we push the plunger in, the air has no place to go. It's a closed chamber. And so the pressure will increase and decrease depending upon what we do with the plunger here. And what we will do is we'll push the plunger into different volumes, and then we will let the system come to equilibrium, and we will read out the pressure readings on the device. And that's as complicated as it gets. It's really a very simple experiment to do. The hard part is in the data workup and understanding the data. So that's what we're here to try to do this morning. And so basically what they tell us to do is to attach the 20 mil syringe to the gas pressure sensor, set up the data collection mode. This is using a veneer probe, and the veneer probe is a handheld device that looks a lot like a calculator. And there's a couple of little things that we need to do to set up to make sure that our units are correct, that we're doing units in milliliters, and pressure is going to be output in, I believe, in kilopascals. So we didn't go over the unit of pascals, but pascals is a unit of pressure, very similar to torr and to millimeters of mercury, but it's a unit that is used in physics more often. And so they decided to go ahead and use this in pascals, and the K in front of it means kilo, means thousands. So we're doing this in the thousands of pascals. And the data has been input for us already. Essentially what Krista did is Krista went in and did the experiment and collected the data, and she input the data here for the volume. So we're taking readings at 5 mils, 10 mils, 12, 15, 17.5, 20. And then we're not taking a data point at 40. We're asked to extrapolate to what would happen at 40. And that's why there are the question marks that are here is, what is our pressure reading going to be at 40? And we're going to estimate that based on some graphing that we're going to do. And what they want us to do here is they want us to calculate the constant? Is it P divided by V direct or P times V, which means that it's inverse? And they want us to go through and do a calculation here and figure out which is more consistent, pressure divided by volume or pressure times volume, to figure out which one of these is more consistent. And the pressure readings at the volume of 5 milliliters was 110 kilopascals, at 10, 56 kilopascals, at 12, 42 kilopascals, at 15, 35, and so on. And what we can see just by looking at the data really quickly is that if we look at the volume of 5 to 10, the transition here, that basically we went and we doubled the volume, that when we doubled the volume and we look at what happens to the kilopascals went down by half. So when we multiply the volume by 2, the pressure goes down by half. And I think that we can see that again, if we go from 10 to 20, the volume is going up by 2, it's doubling, so multiply by 2. And yet when we look at the pressure, 56 to 25, the pressure decreased by half. So when we multiply the volume by 2, the pressure is decreasing by half. And that's a trend that we can continue to see as we look through this data. And so, like I said, very simple experiment that we're doing. And there's a series of questions we'll go through and we can work on some of these questions together. But let's deal with this one really quick here. Let's look at what happens if we take and do pressure divided by volume and pressure times volume. And we'll just work out each one of these. And so here we'll do pressure divided by volume. And on this side, we'll do pressure times volume. And we'll look to see which way is more consistent. So we'll grab a calculator and pressure divided by volume, 110 divided by 5, that equals 22. So the first one here would be 22. And because we did pressure divided by volume, let's put some units to it. So pressure, kilopascals divided by volume, this would be kilopascals divided by milliliters would be the units. And if we want to do pressure times volume, 5 times 110, it's going to be 500 something. So 5 times 110, this is going to equal 550. And this time it is kilopascals times milliliters. So the units are different. All right, let's do that same thing again. Let's do that for the next one, 10 and 56. So 56 divided by 10, pressure divided by volume, it's 5.6. So we have 5.6 kilopascals per milliliter. And 10 times 56 is going to be 560. I was going to do it on the calculator, but we don't need to. With some of these, it's easy enough just to do them in our head. Well, what we can see right off the bat here is that pressure divided by volume doesn't look like it's a very consistent number. And yet pressure times volume is coming out with a number which is much more consistent, much more similar. Let's keep this going. So let's do 42 divided by 12. 42 divided by 12. Oh, come on, it doesn't want to do the one for some reason. There we go, 3.5. kilopascals per milliliter, and 42 times 12 equals 504. Still trending that the right-hand side is being more consistent. 35 divided by 15, 2.33. This number on the left is not being very consistent at all. 15 times 35, 525, still staying in the 500 range. 17.5 and 30. So 30 divided by 17.5. 1.7. And on the other side, 17.5 times 30, 525. One last one to do. 20 and 25. 25 divided by 20, 1.25. And yes, I'm not being very careful about sig figs right now. I'm just collecting the data. We can work on sig figs in a little bit. 20 times 25, 500. So working on sig figs, each one of these pieces of data would give specific sig figs on this other side. And maybe we should keep track of that one sig fig. And this would be supposedly, if we're to the ones position, there needs to be a decimal there. This would be three, but because we're doing multiplication, we go with the smallest, so it should be one sig fig. So we'll correct our data and round it to the one sig fig. And rounding 550 to one sig fig, we should round it up to 600. So we'll do that. The next piece of data should be two sig figs. So 5.6 was correct, and we could leave it at 56. That is correct as long as there's no decimal place. Two sig figs in the next piece of data means that we need to round this to 500. And 500 only seems to have one sig fig. But if we do it at 5.0 times 10 to the second, that would be our two sig figs. Next one, two sig figs. And so it looks like it should be 530. Two sig figs in the next one, if we assume that that's to the ones position. So again, 530. And two sig figs in this one, if we assume that that's a decimal place. And so this should also be 5.0 times 10 to the second. Okay. Now we've got our sig figs correct. I just wanted to clean that up real quick because we always pay attention to sig figs when we're working with these pieces of data and our results. Okay, now, which one of these is more consistent? When we look at it, we're going from 20 to 5.6 to 3.5. These numbers continue to fall. 600, 560, 500, 530, 530, 500. It looks like the more consistent and the relationship is the inverse relationship, pressure times volume, saying that this is what we call an inverse relationship, and these numbers being more consistent. Okay, now a series of questions to answer on that data that we processed. If the volume is doubled from 5 to 10, what does your data show happens to the pressure? Show the pressure values in your answer. Well, they're wanting you to just go back and to look at this. And when the volume is doubled from 5 to 10, what we find is that the pressure gets cut in half. And so they're just wanting you to explain that in terms of the question. If the volume is halved from 20 to 10, what does your data show? We can go back and we can look up in that data. If the volume is tripled, what does the data show? So these are fairly simple questions to answer. From your answers to the first three questions and the shape of the curve in the plot of pressure versus volume, do you think the relationship between the pressure and volume of a confined gas is direct or inverse? Explain your answer. Now we haven't graphed our data. And so graphing our data is something that they ask you to do down in this piece, in the extension, and to confirm an inverse relationship or a direct relationship. And so that's the piece that I kind of need to show you how to do. I'm not going to ask you to do it, but I'm going to show that to you and show you how we go through and do that. And what they want us to do is they want us to graph the data directly, and then they want us to graph an inverse relationship of the data. So let me show you, graphing wise, what they want us to do. Okay, so which lab is it, Maggie? We're doing the, it's not in the lab manual, and online in module, here, let's do it this way. Let me see. One second. Okay, Maggie, do you see in the chat that I put a file in the chat? Yeah, you can download that. That'll give you the file if you're trying to take data along with while we're lecturing. That'll be faster than me going in and trying to activate it in Canvas while we're in the middle of lecture. So that's an easier way to get you the data there real quick. Okay, so graphing data as a way to find the relationship when we're looking to try to figure out what the relationship is between this data. We're asking the question, is the relationship direct or indirect or inverse? Between pressure and volume. Direct or inverse. And to be clear, what a direct relationship would be, if we had a direct relationship between these, what we would say is that as pressure goes up, volume would go up. And this is what we would say is a direct relationship. Inverse is where pressure goes up, volume goes down. This would be an inverse relationship. So in a direct relationship, if we assume a direct relationship, the way that we graph these to figure out a direct relationship or an inverse relationship in terms of graphing is we look for a relationship that is a straight line. We're looking for when we plot the data, do we get a straight line or not? And if we're looking at a direct relationship, then the way that we plot the data is we take the proportionality and we treat it as a as if there's a proportionality constant, pressure equals some constant. So we'll use, it's a good variable for the constant. Let's use M times V. This would be a formula where M is a proportionality constant. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to follow the equation of a straight line, y equals mx plus b. And m in the same thing here, m is the slope. So what we're doing is we're mapping pressure and y together. So p, pressure, is going to be on the y-axis, and volume is going to be on the x-axis, and m is our slope. And so if we take and we put pressure on the y-axis and we put volume on the x-axis and we plot the data, then we ask, is that data going to be in a straight line or not? And so if the data does come out that we get a straight line, and we don't know if it will, we're just saying this is a possibility. If we get a straight line, then the conclusion is that the relationship is direct. If we don't get a straight line, the relationship is not direct. Okay, the other possibility is an inverse relationship. Let's see how we map an inverse relationship. For an inverse relationship, here, what we're doing is we're saying that the pressure is inversely proportional to volume. And so if we want to put a proportionality constant into this one, then the way in which we do that is we put pressure equals a proportionality constant times 1 over the volume. And now when we look at it as a straight line, we do the same thing, y equals mx plus b. And we map into this pressure onto the y-axis, and this time 1 over volume onto the x-axis. And so what we would look for this time, and m is our slope, what we would look for this time as we graph our data is we would graph pressure and 1 over volume. And we look to see, do we get a straight line relationship this time? If we get a straight line relationship this time, then the relationship is inverse. Both of these graphs cannot be straight lines. Only one will be a straight line. Only one will be correct. And we need to figure out by graphing which one is correct. So now we have if the graph of pressure versus 1 over volume results in a straight line, then the relationship is inverse. Okay, so that's where we're going. And what I have is a screen share that I'm going to do on my computer to Excel. So let me switch over to my Excel spreadsheet, and then we'll go and we'll put the data in and I'll show you. So let me stop the share here and we will share desktop two. And I'll bring up Excel. Okay, now you should be able to see the Excel spreadsheet that I've got on my second desktop. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take, and I have set up here volume versus pressure. You can see that I have pressure in kilopascals on the y-axis, and that is true on both graphs. I have volume on the x-axis for the direct relationship, and I have 1/volume on the x-axis for the inverse relationship. And we're going to see which one of these results in a straight line. We're going to put our data in. As we put our data in, it's going to automatically calculate 1/volume for us. So in here, I have 1/volume. So as I put in my volume, this one will calculate 1/volume in order to be able to graph it. And I have a linear regression over here, which is going to calculate the slope m. And it's also going to calculate the y-intercept for me as we go in and we put in that data. So we're going to go in and let's put in each piece of our data that was calculated in the experiment. So our first volume was 5 milliliters. And our pressure for that was 110 kilopascals. And we can see that we get that point coming out on each one of our graphs. All right, we'll go in and we'll put in 10 milliliters and 56 kilopascals. Our second data piece. And our linear regression line has started here calculating. This one looks like it's a straight line too, but as we put in more data, let's see what happens. 12 milliliters and 42 kilopascals from our experiment. 15 milliliters and 35 kilopascals. The next one is 17.5 milliliters and 30 kilopascals. And the last piece of data that we had was 20 milliliters and 25 kilopascals. Okay, we can see how our data has propagated in. And what we can see is that when we look at the volume versus pressure, and this was the relationship that we were looking to see if we got a straight line in this, this was going to be our direct relationship. And what we're seeing is this is not a straight line at all, that what we're getting is we're getting a curve, and that this curve is coming down towards zero. And basically we're developing an asymptote towards zero, and that this data is not linear at all, but curved data. On the other side, in our indirect relationship, that 1/volume is related to the pressure, we do get a nice straight line here. And the slope of that line is 565, very close to the constant that we were calculating before. I'll go back and I'll show you that constant that we were calculating before. But this 565 number is the slope, is the proportionality constant. And that is the average of all of those calculations that we were doing, pressure times volume. It's basically the average of the pressure times volume data. And our intercept, while should be zero, is off a little bit. It's -2.88. So that's our y-intercept. That's where we're going to intercept this y value over here when we get to x equals zero. And that tells us that the relationship between pressure and volume is an indirect relationship, and that this is the correct relationship in a linear relationship. Okay, let's switch it from here. So we've done our graphing and we've shown our graphs, and we can draw those graphs on our sheet, and we'll do that in just a second. So I'll stop that screen share. We'll go back to the iPad. Okay. And what we found when we looked at these two, direct relationship and inverse relationship, we found that the data here, when we look at the actual data, so we can say actual data showed a relationship where this came down in a slope and was not a straight line, which means that this relationship is not a direct relationship, that the graph that we got was different. this one for the inverse relationship actually worked out and was correct. And so this is the graph that we observed. And that is the relationship that we observed with these. And just to go back to show you, we had a slope here where the slope equaled 556 kilopascals times milliliters, and that number was very much in agreement with the number that we were getting here. If we were to take all these numbers and to average these numbers here, this is the proportionality constant. This is the slope of that straight line. And that's why this number was so consistent every time, because the relationship is an inverse relationship. And when I graph it, I get a straight line. And because they all fall on the same line, rise over run, when I take and I multiply these two together, I get the same proportionality constant. I get the value of M every time. So what we can see is this. Let's go back down here. I'll do it down here. If pressure times, or if pressure equals M times 1 over V, and I multiply both sides by V to move V to the other side, then what happens when I move V to the other side? Let's do it in green. So I'll multiply both sides by V. V goes away from the right-hand side, and what I wind up getting is pressure times volume is equal to M. And that is my slope, my constant. And that's why when I multiply them together, they both come out to that same slope all the time, no matter which two pieces of data I measure and multiply together, I get that slope. And yes, there are small variations. So when I look back at the data and I multiply them together, yes, there are small variations in each piece of data, but that's what happens in an experiment. When we go through and we do an experiment to within the ability of our being able to measure on the syringe, the volumes, reading the volumes on the syringe is a little bit difficult, and it's very difficult to hold it super steady and super constant. And that's why these numbers tend to vary a little bit. If we had a better piece of equipment, we would find that these numbers would be much closer than what we're getting in this experiment. But so what we've discovered by going through and doing this and graphing it is that we have an inverse proportional relationship between the two. And that will allow us to then to be able to answer the rest of these questions. So from your answers to the three questions and the shape of the curve in the plot of pressure versus volume, do you think the relationship between the pressure and the volume of a confined gas is direct or indirect? Explain your answer. We've given the data to be able to complete that. Based on your data, what would you expect the pressure to be if the volume of the syringe was increased to 40 mils? Explain or show your work to support your answer. So they're asking about this one. What is this value? And how do we figure out what this value is? Well, there's a couple of different ways that we could do it. We could do it in a qualitative sort of way or a quantitative way. What we can do is we can say, well, we know that this is an inverse relationship. And so if I find the piece of data that, like 20, where the 40 is twice the value of this one, and I go over here and this pressure was 25, then if I double the volume, the pressure has to be cut in half. So I would expect that this pressure at 25 should be divided by 2, and I can tell what it is. So since it's an inverse relationship. So here in this experiment, we could say that using the 20 milliliter data equals 25 kilopascals, and the relationship that and that pressure is inversely proportional to volume, then at 40 milliliters, the pressure should equal 1/2 the pressure at the 20 milliliters, so 25 kilopascals, which is going to equal 12.5. That's the piece that we should expect right there. That is sort of a hand-waving sort of way, or a qualitative way. If we really wanted to do it quantitative, what we would do is we would go and we would use the graph. We would use that Excel graph. And what we would do is we would use the slope of the line, and we would find on here our 40 milliliters. So 40 milliliters is all going to be all the way up by the top. And we would find that piece of data, and then we would read off our volume, and we would figure out what our volume is. Or mathematically, we could use the slope of this line, which was 556. So here's the way that we would do this. It was 556 kilopascals milliliters. And that was that pressure equals 556 kilopascals milliliters times 1/1 the volume. And what we would do is, if we want to figure out what the pressure is going to be, we simply take and put our volume, we simply take and put our volume into this equation, such that pressure at 40 is going to equal 556 kilopascals milliliters times 1/40 milliliters. Notice that the units of milliliters are going to cancel, and I'm going to get units of kilopascals. So we take 556 divided by 40 equals 13.9. This is what we would get if we were to use the graph, rather than just cutting it in half by following the trend. Here we've used the actual slope of the line, the average of all of those relationships, in order to calculate what the pressure should be. And so this would be our answer, although we should follow this to the correct number of sig figs. So if we went through and we did all of the correct sig figs and we looked at all of the data that was going into this, this slope data would have closer to one sig fig, and we should be closer to one sig fig into here. And so I hate to actually go back and do all of those to one sig fig, but if we round it off to one sig fig, 13.9 to one sig fig would round to 10. 1.0 times 10 to the first kilopascals to one sig fig. And why is that one sig fig? It's one sig fig because within our data that we had, that was all the way back up here at the beginning of the experiment, we had a couple of data pieces that had one sig fig in them that go into our calculation. And because of that one sig fig going into our calculation, it would be, in calculating our slope of our line, the one sig fig gives us a one sig fig data piece here in our constant calculation. And then we average all of these out, and that would average out with one sig fig. That's where that would happen. Okay. What else do I need to show you with this? Based on your data, what would you expect the pressure to be if the volume of the syringe was decreased to 2.5? Now you know how to find that. So you can go through and you can find that one. what experimental factors are assumed to be constant in this experiment? We didn't talk about that. I'm going to give you that. We're expecting that temperature and the number of moles, that there are no leaks in the syringe. That's a perfect segue into the next little piece that I want to talk about. So let me go ahead and do that. And eight, they have the graphing here that we've already done for you. Nine, how constant were the values for K that you obtained in question eight? For K, the constant, we're calling this M, slope. So how constant were they? And using P, V, and K, write an equation representing Boyle's law, write a verbal statement. Let's call that M. A verbal statement that correctly expresses Boyle's law. So you can go through and do that part. The extension, we're going to cross off. We're not going to do the extension part because I already went through and showed you how to do that in Excel, or did it for you in Excel. Okay, I want to go back to this piece, this holding temperature and moles constant. Let me go back to this idea. Combined gas law. If we look at the combined gas law, remember that we derived this last time. It comes out of PV equals NRT. And the combined gas law was pressure times volume, PV, P1V1 over N1 T1 is equal to P2 V2 over N2 and T2. This was the combined gas law. If we take and we hold temperature and the number of moles constant, then what we're saying is that T1 is equal to T2 and N1 is equal to N2. And when that happens, if we take and we rewrite that equation, and we just write the number of moles and the temperature as N1 and T1, then what we find is that this is like dividing by one on both sides. In other words, what I can take is I can take and multiply both sides by N1, T1, and the number of moles and the temperature are going to go away. And my relationship resolves down to P1, V1 equals P2, V2. These guys here, this is the relationship of Boyle's law. Boyle's law says that the pressure one times the volume one is equal to the pressure two times the volume two. Well, where does that actually come from based on the experiment that we're doing? Well, watch this. If we take pressure, and we say that our relationship was pressure equals some constant slope M times 1 over V. This was the inverse relationship. That gave us a straight line where M is the slope. And let's use the word in here, constant slope. Because M doesn't change. And if we take and derive this 4M and we multiply both sides of the equation by V in order to move V to the other side, what we get is pressure times volume equals M, equals a constant. And so it always equals the same value. And it doesn't matter if it's P1 and V1 or P2 and V2, they both equal M, not M1 and M2, because M is a constant, but they both equal m. And what that means is if they are both equal to the constant, then P1 and V1 are equal to P2 and V2, they are equal to each other. And this is Boyle's law. And it's where it's derived from. It's derived from the inverse relationship that pressure and volume are inversely proportional. And that when you graph them, and you graph pressure and 1/volume, you get a constant slope. And if we take the pressure and we multiply them times the volume, we get the same value no matter what two pairs of data we use. And that means that these two pairs of data are equal to each other. And then that allows us to be able to go through and to calculate changing conditions. So let me show you an example of how we can use this to calculate changing conditions. We had a question in the lab that said that we wanted to know what the pressure was at 40 milliliters. So this was question, let's go back and find which question it was. It was question number 5. On question number 5, we asked, what is the pressure at 40 milliliters? And the way in which we can do that question in trying to figure out what is the pressure at 40 milliliters is we can use one of the other pieces of data. And it doesn't matter which piece of data we choose. We chose to look at the 20 and the 25. So we had pressure equals 25 kilopascals and volume equals 20 milliliters, and pressure, so this is pressure 1 and volume 1, that's a pair. Pressure 2 equals question mark, volume 2 equals 40 milliliters. How do we go through and we figure it out? We use the relationship P1, V1 equals P2, V2. These two pairs, when multiplied times each other, must equal the same value. And what we're asking here is for pressure 2. We're asking to solve for P2. So we derive the equation first. We take and we divide both sides by V2 to get V2 out of the way. That moves it over to the left-hand side. And we find that pressure 2 is equal to P1 V1 over V2. Which is going to be equal to 25 kilopascals times the volume of 20 milliliters divided by 40 milliliters. The milliliters cancel, and I will get an answer, 25 times 20 divided by 40. Equals 12.5. And that would be my final answer. We would have to do the sig figs. Actually, I should do sig figs before I box that in, because now we're doing, that was not my sig fig color. There it is. This is 2 sig figs. We'll assume that there's a decimal place there and that's 2, and that this was 40 and that was 2. So we should be at 2 sig figs for this. 12.5 is going to round to 13 milliliters. And that's what we would report as my pressure 2 and an example of how to use Boyle's law. Now, how did that compare to our answers that we did before? Well, we had a couple of answers that we did before. Let's check it. So in our questions, here we go. We went through and we did it in the What I said was the sort of qualitative way, where we knew that one was doubling, and so we were going to cut the other one in half, and we got 12.5, the same answer that we had before, and rounded to two sig figs, that would be 13. So that would be an agreement. And then we had the graphical way, using all of the data and using the averages for all of these. And in that graphical way, that one we calculated and did it here. And we got 13.9, very close to the 13 value that we got when we used the actual Boyle's law. So different ways to solve the problem. Graphically, using all the data, which probably gives us a slightly better average. This came out to 10 kilopascals to one sig fig. 13 rounded to one sig fig would be 10 kilopascals, would be the same answer if we were to do it to one sig fig. So we're getting, by different ways, getting the same answer within the same level of precision of one sig fig. Okay. And I think that that's pretty much everything that we need to do. So what you need to do, let's just wrap up real quick. What you need to do in order to complete this assignment is you need to go online onto Canvas and download from module 7, you need to download the Boyle's Law experiment. Within the Boyle's Law experiment, the data is given to you. You need to complete the constants and make a decision, as we've done. And then you need to answer the questions that are 1 through 10. And answering the questions 1 through 10, you do not need to go through and do the extension piece. And we have answered a couple of these already for you, but I think given everything that we've done in the video, I think you can answer the rest of them 1 through 10. Sound like a plan? Maggie, any sort of questions in terms of what we've gone through? Have we made it clear enough? Awesome. Okay, I think that's the end of the video. I'm gonna cut the video here. We'll get it up online and post it so you guys can get this assignment. Remember to go out and vote today. I don't care which way you vote, but make your voice heard. Get out there, make sure that you're voting early. Make sure your vote counts, everybody. Okay, that's it. Best of luck to everybody and have a great day. All right.